And thanks for joining me this evening. I'm Aaron Hay. You're listening to Mizzou Music on Classical 90.5 FM. I am joined in the studio by Professor of Piano,
that's
Peter
right.
Miyamoto, and Assistant Professor of Violin, Julie Rosenfeld. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Of course, always. So then this is the first time that I've had Julie and you on, Peter, but this is the second round of your performing the cycle of Beethoven.
Collaborative
sonatas.
That's right. And okay. I'll also be doing the solo, but that will start in the fall.
Okay. We'll just, when that comes
one
around.
Thing at
we'll
a time.
Take that out when we get there, right? He's not thinking about it yet. Or maybe he is.
I bet he is. Well, okay. So on this last, on the previous program, you picked kind of a wide span as far as when you were doing these pieces. And I'm looking at your program now, and it looks pretty similar.
We did the same,
more or less.
He wrote three as a set of Opus 12, which is our very earliest works. Three as Opus 30, which are kind of middle, early. And then actually he wrote nine of his 10 violin sonatas by the time he was 32. And then there's one that was written
much later.
We're actually including that on this program.
So we are doing the first and the last chronologically, but they're not that far apart years-wise, because his last violin sonata was only written in 1812. Mm-hmm. So it's not technically a late piece like some of the late quartets or the late piano sonatas. It's actually kind of a transitional work like the Opus 95 quartet or the Archduke Trio. So Opus 95 is the quartet. We're playing Opus 96, and Opus 97 is the Archduke Trio. And these three works are kind of considered transitional to the late period. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing.
Okay. What's kind of interesting as I do the survey of all of these works is that everything seems a little transitional. You'll find little bits of late Beethoven even in the earliest works sometimes. So that's part of the interest that we have in doing this.
Yeah, and part of the fun of, mm-hmm. of getting to watch it, and part of the fun that's of getting to do it as well, is you get to really kind of absorb the collection of works as a whole, but also the pieces individually.
Sure, sure. I mean, Beethoven's output is so seminal to what we call classical music, although it's not classical, but the idea that he goes from the classical period of Mozart and Haydn and takes us into the romantic period of Mendelssohn, Brahms, Tchaikovsky, all the late greats, you know, the ones that people tend to think of as classical music. Really, most of it is the romantic period. And Beethoven is that revolutionary composer who brings us from one genre into the other.
Right. And that's like with the first sonata, he's still with Haydn at that
point.
And he dedicated it to Salieri, who's, you know, we might know from the Amadeus
movie.
Does he get a bad rap?
Yeah, he gets a really bad rap.
Because, I mean, yeah.
Don't take it as truth, please.
It was a great movie, though.
It really is, but yeah.
But the first sonata is typical early Beethoven, lots of energy. In the last movement, I think it's a very dancey, it's a real hoot to play, and you get some virtuosity and some humor. So, you know, it's really great.
Well, I think people tend to forget that Beethoven, you know, we think of him as an angry type person. So he's, you know, going deaf. He's angry at God. He's angry at the world. He considers suicide and decides not to because he has too much to give as far as his art to humanity. But we tend to think of the quintessential Beethoven as being a very angry person. He was a very funny person also. And I think he gets that from Haydn, with whom he studied, because even in the most serious, late, very intense music of the late period, there are movements that you just laugh out loud. Mm. They're so funny. And those exist in all three of these pieces, really, those Wonderful. Moments.
Nice. Well, that sounds great. And so tell me about the second piece, the sonata number six, Opus 30.
Well, it's kind of, I think it gets overlooked in the 10.
It does.
It's probably the least played, the least known. I happen to love it. I think it's a very understated, it's got such understated beauty, dignity, you know, it's very lyrical.
Lyricism.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's a great piece.
Very cool.
And this is
new to some audiences.
And this is written in the same year as this Heiligenstadt Testament. So Beethoven was living in a suburb of Vienna called Heiligenstadt, and he writes this letter to his brother saying, I can tell now I'm going deaf and the doctors are not helping and I'm going to kill myself. Except I'm not going to go kill myself. I'm instead going to dedicate myself to writing great works of art for humanity because I love humanity. And it would be a tragedy if I killed myself and you didn't have me to love. So, but it's a cri de coeur in so many ways, this Heiligenstadt Testament. And it's very poignant. Whenever I teach a class on Beethoven, I actually read the whole thing to the class because people don't realize what a tormented soul he was at this point. I mean, right. He says, how can I, as a composer who should have the best hearing of anybody, I can't hear when people speak to me now. I can't hear a flute when it plays a melody. I can't hear the cows and the sheep mooing in the pastures anymore. This is potentially life, you know, my career is at an end potentially, but not, because what it essentially does is it isolates him from everything else and he's able to conjure up all these incredible things that are inside his head.
Right.
So this isolation that occurs as a result of the deafness, ongoing deafness, which is complete by the time he's writing the last sonata, frees him up to do so many incredible things in retrospect, really.
Yeah.
And it's just that moment that he somehow comes to terms with his life and the situation that you do get this feeling in a lot of the music that gets written after that of almost spiritual resignation.
Yes.
Or acceptance of the circumstances. And I think that comes through maybe in the second piece that we're playing, but certainly in the last sonata,
in the slow movement in particular. Mm-hmm. So it's we tend to think of the great spiritual movements of Beethoven. Certainly in the last quartets, the great slow movement, the Heilige Dankesang, is one of the great spiritual pieces of music ever written. Or the last piano sonata, the last string quartet, also with this incredible Muss es sein, es muss sein, must it be? It must be. And again, this is Beethoven being resigned to his fate and just deciding that he is going to give whatever he can as a composer.
That's great.
It makes me cry,
right,
actually,
yeah,
to think about this.
And as a performer, it's a big responsibility, I think, that we feel to reach that type of humanity.
And to drive that kind of emotional response.
Right. Yeah.
That's great. Right. That's wonderful. And and I don't think I even mentioned it yet in the interview. That's how fast we got into it.
Okay.
We should probably talk about when this show is.
Good idea. Good idea.
So this is the second of the
Beethoven or Bust.
Beethoven or Bust sonata performances with Peter Miyamoto and this time now Julie Rosenfeld joining on violin and performing the first, sixth, and tenth sonata for violin and piano from Beethoven. And that is coming up on Sunday, February 24th at 3 at the Whitmore here at the Mizzou Fine Arts Building right here in Columbia.
That's right.
Beyond both being faculty here at the School of Music, you guys have a shared background as well. Both of you graduates of the Yale program.
And Curtis.
I didn't graduate from Curtis, but we both went to Curtis.
And we share a common teacher in that, a very famous violin pedagogue, Shimon Goldberg, was Julie's teacher. And I worked a lot with him. As a matter of fact, he gave seminars on all the 10 violin sonatas. And I was piano in, I believe, 8 of them.
Wow.
So, and they were very intensive. They were spaced out every 2 weeks, played with a different person, and we went very much in depth into each of the sonatas.
Yeah.
So you did every 2 weeks, you did one over a period of 20 weeks?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. Mm-hmm.
So this was a graduate seminar because we were at the Yale. It has the Graduate School of Music. And so I was there in the early 80s. Peters comes about 10 years later, but that's okay. Goldberg was still there. And I actually, as my master's thesis, played over the course of one weekend all 10 violin sonatas, violin sonatas, with one pianist. His name was Daryl Rosenbluth, and he was one of the star pianists at that time when I was there. We studied very intensively over the course of an entire year, obviously, these 10 sonatas. And I had maybe played two of them previously, studied a couple of them, number 8, which is and the Spring Sonata, which are the two that students often do. But I had never done any of the others, including the great Kreutzer Sonata, which Peter will be playing later this semester, actually, with Ida Kavafian.
That's right, as part of the Plowman.
Oh, wow.
So he's not being faithful to me at this point. But so I was really able to just concentrate on this body of work that Goldberg was so immersed in. He was the concertmaster of the Berlin Philharmonic from the age of 19. He grew up outside of Berlin. He lived in Berlin for many, many years until the Nazis threw him out, of course, like everybody else, or they killed him. And so this milieu of this repertoire is right down his alley. And of course, I absorbed it. I couldn't wait for the next installment, and I felt like I became Miss Beethoven. His wife used to call me Miss Beethoven. So when I came over for my lessons, were at his house, and it was just an incredible experience.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because I learned much later, I have a lineage through Arthur Schnabel, who's a very famous, he was the first to record all the solo Beethoven piano sonatas, and I have 5 teachers who I considered worked with him. But it turns out that Mr. Goldberg taught basically out of Schnabel's house in Tremezzo in Italy some time. So they were, of course, very close, and I'm sure they shared a lot of musical insights with each other as they were.
Right. You know. So I think Peter and I think about these pieces very similarly because of this. And that's the wonderful thing about a collaboration with someone such as he is.
Well, that's great. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much, both of you, for stopping by. And please try to get out and see these shows. And good luck. And break a leg and have a great performance. And I look forward to seeing it.
Thanks
very
much.
Absolutely.